Hello, my friends. We meet again. It is time for the Player Advantage Podcast, also known sometimes as this podcast right here, because joining me, this is right here, joining me for the first time in a very long time.
It's been forever.
It's been forever. Ages. It's Monet. How are you?
I'm... Well, I mean, I have feelings right now. A lot of stuff happened behind the scenes. I'm feeling it right now. So, I'm good, like, generally, but right now I'm fucking like, what is going on?
Okay,
I feel a sense of confusion. Do you want to jump like straight into it?
Yeah, I'm glad we chose to do this today. Like, by total happenstance, we chose to do this today. Because we've been trying to record together, just to kind of give you guys a glimpse of how the metaphorical sausage is made. Two months ago, I did that episode with Vincente. And then I was trying to wrangle people, trying to organize stuff. And I was like, I'll just do an episode by myself. And then I just wasn't feeling it for a while. And then today, stuff kind of fell in place. And we're doing this episode. Today happens to be March 7th, happens to be the date of AEW's Revolution pay-per-view. So I only caught the back half of the show. I watched everything from, I got home during Matt Hardy versus Hangman Page, which, okay, match, please stop putting Matt Hardy in 20-minute singles matches in 2021. Thank you.
I was gonna say that. Wow. Really? They're still doing that?
Really? Yeah.
Holy shit.
Matt, it's okay to take a different role. Your legs are really fucked up, dude.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I saw that. I saw the Face of the Revolution ladder match, which was won by Scorpio Sky, which is cool. I definitely thought they were gonna put Cody over, and I was already in the midst of calling him 2021 Jeff Jarrett.
Stop, really?
I had a tweet drafted. Cody Rhodes is... Because I tweeted like a week ago, and luckily I said this in the middle of the night so nobody was able to check me about it, that AEW is just TNA with four Jeff Jarretts. It is! And given the fact that they signed Christian Cage and he came out to his TNA music.
Oh my god.
They're just
giving you reasons at this point.
It's TNA. Look, I say this as somebody who loves TNA. Who loves
TNA too.
Like 2004 to like 2008. No, 2009 TNA. That's my shit.
Holy shit. That's your, oh my god. I wasn't watching back then.
I can tell you the first time I saw TNA was sometime in like 2005.
Fucking A.
Or it might have been late 2004. No, it had to be 05 because of where I was living at the time. I was flipping through channels with my brother, and TNA is just on, and I just see Jeff Hardy. I'm like, what the fuck? Where have you been?
Holy shit.
So that like TNA used to be my shit. I say as somebody who I do actually like AEW. I know it seems like I don't, because of the way I talk about it. There are a lot of things I like about AEW. I just would like it to be better. For me personally, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. It felt at the start, more like a vehicle for like the Bucks and Rhodes and Omega and stuff.
It still kind of is. It's very much is that Cody was able to parlay this into being on a show on TNT. Like, it is a vehicle for him. It's a vehicle for the Bucks and Omega, and Omega and the Bucks. Fans of the Elite seem to think they're a bigger deal than they are, and they're not. Like, some dude got super mad at me like last year because I said that Brock Lesnar is a bigger star than Kenny Omega. He is.
I mean, he is.
More people know who he is.
Everyone knew who he was. Fucking UFC champion.
He was UFC heavyweight champion. When with that meant a lot more than it means now. And it's still a big deal if you're a big name UFC fighter. Like, people know who, like, people know who Max Holloway is, right? Like, people know who Conor McGregor is. People know who Khabib is. But Brock in, like, 2010, 2011, people were, check those buy rates. Brock was a fucking star.
Dude, Extreme Rules, like, made so much fucking money that
was a huge 2012, deal. Right? Yeah, Extreme Rules 2012 when he came back, yeah. So, but I mean, when he was in the UFC, like, it was, you put Brock Lesnar on the card, you're selling out an arena. You're selling out the arena, you're going to do 500,000 buys on pay-per-view. Like, Brock's a big deal. But I find it hard to defend the end of AEW Revolution. Because, granted, this is a production gaffe, but it's such a big production gaffe. It's the one thing they couldn't afford to get wrong.
My God.
So, for those of you that do not know, AEW, last few months, they've been running a storyline with Jon Moxley, formerly known to WWE fans as Dean Ambrose, and Kenny Omega. Over the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. The ostensible blow-off for it was tonight in a exploding barbed wire death match. And the match itself was fine. Like, a solid, solid gimmick match.
I mean, for me, I felt like it was...
You, as somebody who watches a lot more death matches. Or has watched, I'd say.
Yeah. I felt like there was a lot lacking, but I mean, it seems like people generally did like it, you know, and that's fine. But
the finish. Kenny hits the, actually you run through the finish.
Oh yeah. So there was interference by
Gallows and Anderson. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say I was gonna try to come up with the nickname, but I don't know like what they're going by.
They're the Good Brothers.
The Good. Oh my God, really?
Yes.
I love that. has the Good Brothers getting involved in the match? They I forget how it comes about, but I know that they show up. Kenny has the bat, the Onita bat, exploding Onita bat. Fucking whacks Moxley with it. He kicks out of that shit. And then Omega hits him with a one-winged angel on the chair, on an open chair. Not just like on a chair on the mat, but like it's opened up. Someone can sit on it. In this case, Moxley's head. Wins the match. They're celebrating a whole bunch. I think I had it on mute. I think they were talking. I think. And then they walked out onto the stage. As they're walking out on the stage, the counter goes down and Kingston runs out near the end of it. And he's like, what are you guys doing? We got to save my lovely friend Moxley. I got Tim's on for this occasion. So he runs out to the ring. He's like, oh my God, we got to get up. He's trying to get Moxley up. Can't get Moxley up, puts him down, gets over him. And we have one of the most, as you described, flaccid,
wet fart. Flaccid,
just, it's abysmal.
Oh my God.
I cannot believe. I can't believe it. Like, I remember watching like Onita versus Funk or Onita versus Hayabusa or like all these like different matches. I'm pretty sure they had one.
Onita pretty sure. Hayabusa?
My mind is My mind is like going. I'm pretty sure they did. But put me in a home.
Where is my body?
Literally,
it's
bad. It's really bad, Marcus. And I remember like just like when it happened, I was gifting it. Like I was gonna post it, and I did.
Yeah, you were like, I gotta gift the explosion. I gotta gift the explosion.
I have to because it's a big deal.
Because it's an explosion.
It's supposed to be big and loud noises and. We're supposed to come to the conclusion that these two
that Moxley has been killed.
Killed. Like, there's supposed to be so much smoke for, like, 5 fucking minutes that you cannot tell what's in the ring.
Right.
that's not the case. It's very, as you said, once again, flaccid.
And people were chanting refund, like
they were chanting. Oh my god.
Oh. Oof.
My reaction just was just like, I wish we had gotten it.
Oh my god, your reaction like, in the 30 seconds leading up to.
You're like, oh my god, here we go.
And then Kingston comes out, you're like, oh, and he kicks it, here he comes. And you, like, the level of hype, how quickly it died, how quickly it went from, oh my god, to, what was that? And for comparison, I wanted to like check and see like, was this like a cool explosion that I'm remembering, or like, was I 13 when I saw it and thus I remember it as being a much bigger deal than it was. I went back and I watched the just the explosion from Wrestling Society X's Exploding Steel Cage Time Bomb Death Match from their series finale. I remember watching that as a kid and thinking, those guys are dead. Those dudes are dead and gone.
Yeah. Oh my god. When you showed it to me, I was just like,
It's nuts. The whole ring is white with just the explosion and all the smoke. The camera shakes.
That's the thing that got me.
Yeah, the camera, like, the fucking hard cam shakes.
I was like, what the fuck?
Like, people in the crowd are, like, covering their heads and ears because it's so loud. And I want to just point out, if you're wondering, what the fuck is Wrestling Society X? Exactly. Wrestling Society X, it's basically the precursor to Lucha Underground. Like, so much of the stuff that happens in Lucha Underground, so many of the people who were in Lucha Underground, they were also in Wrestling Society X. And they did a lot of, like, similar visual stuff. Like, they, down to the fact that, like if you remember the temple in Lucha Underground, it is, I don't know if it's the same building. It totally could be. But it's really similar to the WSX bunker.
Oh, yeah, bunker. They call it the bunker.
Yeah, the WSX bunker. Wrestling Society X doesn't have a huge budget, right? Like, it was a show on MTV, presumably bankrolled at least in part by MTV. They did not have nearly the budget that AEW has. AEW is owned by a billionaire. The Khan family is stupid rich.
Yeah.
Like, they own multiple sports teams. In America and overseas. There is no reason that Tony Khan, mark for old hardcore shit that he is, there's no reason for him to go, let's not do a bigger explosion.
And that's the thing. Like, you figured they would have tested that, right?
I thought the ring was going to blow up. I expected the ring to fall.
I thought it was going to explode. I thought when you brought that up, oh my god.
Yeah, the ring should have just fallen apart.
Because at least that would have been interesting.
Yeah. It would have been fucking radical. Like, it would at least, like, yeah, the explosion itself, like, it looks like it's sparklers. It's sparklers, and then the pyro on the ropes goes off, and then there's, like, a slightly bigger explosion outside. It looks terrible. It looked terrible. And I get that they wanted to... They should have tested it, because I get that they wanted to do it in front of the crowd they had. They had something like 1,000 people on hand or something like that.
Yeah.
They should have tested that earlier in the day. Or Wednesday after Dynamite, they should have tested that. Because any other time, when Cody and Brandi announced that they're having a girl, they used more pyro than that. Cody got more pyro in his entrance for the ladder match on this show than they used in that explosion. And
god damn.
WWE has a lot of production things that I hate, right? WWE does a lot of things with their production that I
cannot stand. But they would have got that right. I know they would have got that right. Because when it matters, when it's big stuff, they crush it. Remember when the Big Show threw John Cena through a spotlight?
Oh, that fucking shit ruled. Are you kidding me? They did a lot with it. It seemed like he really did get fucked up. It wasn't like a little spark.
Right, yeah. It did look like the spotlight exploded. Remember, I think it might have been the same year. I think that both of these things might have been in 2009. Remember when Randy Orton tried to kill John Cena with fireworks?
Yeah.
When they had an Iron Man match?
An I Quit match.
No, it was an Iron Man match.
That was an I Quit match.
They had these. I don't think Cena and Orton ever had an I Quit match.
I thought,
which is weird because that's like the Cena specialty is the I Quit match, but I don't think they ever had one.
I thought they said that. Wow.
No, they had a submission match. They had an Iron Man match. They had a ton of
no
matches.
They had a million
no holds barred matches. I want to say they had a Last Man Standing match at some point.
Yeah, that was the one thing.
But they had an Iron Man match at Bragging Rights 2009.
Yeah, that was when it was like still like bald weird
Orton, yeah, right? Bald weird Orton. Yeah.
Bald weird Orton. Yeah, that was still him. I remember that. And I think Legacy
he tries
got
to blow him up with the pyro.
With the fucking pyro. He's like, I think what the dude's like at the thing and he's like, get away from it, and just fucking just hits every button.
Yeah, just mashes every button and it just fucking blows up. And I remember thinking, oh my god, he just killed him. And but like Cena rolls away and he gets out of it. But like that was a bigger explosion than this. And so it's not even a matter of safety, because I've seen so many times where they'll do a stunt where it's like somebody, like the pyro goes off too close to somebody, or the pyro goes off in the ring, or somebody gets a fucking fireball. Like there are so many ways you can do this. And so it's not a matter of safety. I feel like they hooked him up and like, yeah, that'll be enough. It's like, no, if the ring is supposed to explode, however much you think is enough, double it.
That's what I'm saying. Like fucking, it was literally on. I'm looking at it right now because I'm obsessed at this point. It's just at the, it looks like it's just at the, just like three sides of the ring, or maybe even like more on the front. Like
so it's the sides that don't have the ropes on them, or yes. The sides that have the barbed wire. Those sides explode. The four posts explode, and like there's some small stuff outside the ring.
It's just so bad.
The ring, the outside of the ring should have been lined.
Dude, there should have been so much smoke that you couldn't tell who was in the fucking ring.
Right. And
like that much.
Like, I assume that Moxley's gonna go off to like be a dad, cause Renee's gotta be due soon. And so this is gonna take him off TV probably till All Out in September. But it's just it would be a more understandable write-off if it looked better. Like, this one thing tanks so much. Like, there's so many things that just... it sucks.
Sprinklers.
Oh my god.
It's the sprinklers for me.
And I'm sorry that, like, I talk a lot about AEW on the show. And, like, the last, like, I want to say four episodes, I've talked a lot about AEW.
And, yeah, that's the thing. Like, I didn't know that.
It seems like I'm always, like, dumping on it. I really do like AEW. There's a lot of things that I like about AEW. I really like Hangman Page and the Dark Order. I really like Scorpio Sky. I really like the Lucha Bro. I like Death Triangle in general. The Phoenix, Pentagon, and Pac.
Oh, I forgot they were there.
Yeah.
Oh shit, that's awesome.
They rule. And I just want to take this time, take a second, really here, quick, here to say,
Go for it.
If you think that Will Ospreay is a better wrestler than Phoenix, I don't care what you have to say about anything.
I cannot believe people think that.
People think
you're wrong.
People think Osprey is the best wrestler in the world.
By any chance, if you're listening and you are what my lovely friend describes, you're wrong.
You're incorrect. You're incorrect.
You're not. You're, that is incorrect.
Phoenix is like I said once that I thought that the exact tweet was the Young Bucks are a better tag or aren't the best tag team in AEW. I said I can't buy into the idea that they're the best tag team in the world because they're not even the best tag team in their own promotion because the Lucha Bros are there. Santana and Ortiz are there. You can make a case for FTR. People got very upset about this. But I'm going to stick to my guns on that. But I'm getting sidetracked. I like AEW a lot. I want to like it more. And when stuff like this happens, it's hard to not talk about it. It is impossible to not talk about it. And I get that people are going to be like, oh, well, it's better than whatever WWE would give you. No, it's not. Because, what, 4 months ago, 3 months ago, they had a match where a dude got set on fire. He got set on fire, the Fiend did, rushed at Randy Orton, and took an RKO while on fire.
Oh, fuck, that really happened?
Yeah, and then Randy set, and then Randy set him on fire. And granted, it wasn't really him, it was a dummy, but the fire looked good because it was real fire. WWE does not miss on...
God, I've been missing so much lately.
Yeah, it's crazy. WWE doesn't miss on special attraction production things. That's, I'd say, the thing they do the best is when it's a special attraction, you have to dress it up and do all this Hollywood TV stuff with it. They kill it.
Hell no.
They're not going to fuck it up.
That's the thing. Yeah, and
this is a moment, the stuff with Moxley and Omega tonight, that should be something that AEW can go forward and put in these video packages and talk about, like, this is what you're going to get in AEW. It should have been there, like, you know, everyone's seen the clip from ECW where Sabu goes into the barbed wire. Like, there's so many cool moments from ECW. I'm going to use them as the example. Like, Taz and Bam Bam going through the ring, New Jack diving off the balcony. There are so many iconic ECW moments. This should have been any of those moments for AEW. This should have been a moment that AEW can, you know, God willing, 10 years from now, go, yeah, this is the moment, right? Where things really change for us. There's so many cool things that they could do with that image of the ring exploding. Right, this is something they could put in a video package 6 months from now when Moxley comes back and he wants revenge on Kenny, right? And they can't. There is no way they can put that explosion in anything.
That's so upsetting. Jesus Christ. This buildup.
It sounds like I'm like dunking on them. I'm genuinely like upset about it.
Yeah, I feel bad. I feel bad for them.
Because it should have been so cool. Really fucking fun. It should have been so cool. Not could have. Should have. It should have been the coolest moment in wrestling this year.
It's an exploding death match. Those it's don't an happen exploding often. Death match.
Nobody does them in America.
No one does them. Yeah, no. It's all Onita in Japan. He's constantly like... Because
it's his match.
It's his match. Yeah, it's what he came up with. It's just upsetting.
It's supremely, you know, you can't win them all, upsetting. But this should have been this should have been a slam dunk. This should have been a layup.
Yeah.
This should have been easy for a company with that much money.
It's crazy. And you're definitely right about, like, you know, WWE, like,
you still there?
What they're good at. Okay. Like, WWE has always had a big complaint levied at it where it's like, you don't focus on, like, the tiny stuff ever. You know, they never focus on. Sometimes that's, like, a pro for them. They know how to, like, execute it.
Right. They're very good at the execution. Like, there's a lot, like, I hate how often they switch angles on everything. Like, as from a, ignoring anything about booking right now, just strictly from production, there are so many little things they do in their production that I can't fucking stand. But
yeah,
when it matters, they get it right every time. Well, not every time, but they get it right most of the time. Like, them missing Edge's first spear in a match in 10 years. That sucked. But Randy Orton setting the Fiend on fire, awesome. You know? And yeah. they nailed it. We're going to move on from this in a second. They had been teasing a big surprise, and that surprise turned out to be Christian Cage, which surprised the shit out of me, genuinely. Because, like, I know everybody been talking since Wednesday, like, who's it going to be? And people kind of came to the conclusion that it had to be Christian. And not because I don't love Christian or anything. I think Christian rules. I always liked Edge better, but Christian does rule. And he's especially rules as Christian Cage in TNA. But I was, because, like, all people were going off of was, they said, Paul White, formerly known as The Big Show, also in AEW now.
What the fuck? Like, that's...
That's crazy, right? That's nuts, right? Talk about a guy you never expected to go anywhere else.
I was just, like, on my phone the other day, and it's like, oh, Paul White in AEW. I'm like, wait.
I feel like everybody had the same reaction where we looked at that and went, haha, that's a pretty good Photoshop. And then I clicked the account that it said from, it said All Elite Wrestling. I said, oh, wait a minute. hold on there, player. Hold on there, player.
Got too much dip on your chip.
That's crazy. But he said it's a Hall of Fame level talent. Someone who works harder than everybody else. And Christian definitely came to mind. My first thought was Kurt Angle. And then when...
Oh, can you imagine?
My very first thought was Kurt Angle. And since they've got that working agreement with Impact, he would have come out to his TNA music and I would have lost my fucking
mind. Shut the fuck up. Oh,
my God.
Oh, my
God. Kurt, if you've never heard Kurt Angle's TNA theme, go listen to it right fucking now. It's fucking so good. Cool. Oh,
you don't even
God.
Need, like, you're working out. This is the first, like, 45 seconds. Pre-workout. Just listen to that. Just listen to the first 45 seconds. That's your pre-workout, and then you're good for the rest. God,
it's so good.
It's fucking solid. It's really fucking good. I haven't listened to it in a long time.
It's so fucking good. But, like, and
is he
then,
still with? Is he still with WWE? By the way, or is he not?
It's unclear. I thought Christian was still with WWE. I thought he was
me
under
too.
Some kind of Legends deal or something because he kept appearing on TV. He showed up there a couple times in the last fall. He was there. He was just in the Royal Rumble match. I was under the assumption that Christian was under some kind of Legends deal. He
Me too.
Apparently is not. Then again, I also thought the Big Show and Sting were on Legends deal. But, like, my next thought, because Tony Khan said it was one of his favorite wrestlers, was the big signing. And really? That made me think, because, like, I know he's a big fan of, like, ECW. Like, if you go back and watch some ECW pay-per-views, from back in the day, Tony Khan is in the crowd. Like, you can see him. Like, a young, like, 19, 20-year-old, however old, Tony Khan in the crowd at, like, some ECW shows in, like, 99.
That's crazy.
So I thought maybe it might be Rob Van Dam, because he hasn't shown up in Impact in a while, so I was under the assumption he's gone from there. So it would make sense for it to be RVD. And then he said it's somebody under 50. And then I was like, shit, Christian does make sense. But like something we were going to talk about later, I did not want it to be a situation where, like, my big worry was that people were going to get their hopes up and then it not be Christian. And then people be mad that it wasn't Christian because it's not the guy they decided that it should be.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're like, oh, well, they said Hall of Fame worthy. And it's like, that's such a nebulous term.
It really is. That's the thing about that term. It's that it's like you can apply that to anyone who's been working
from anybody, 10 plus. Because Hall of Fame worthy does not mean this person always had great matches, that they won a bunch of championships, whatever. The Million Dollar Man never won nothing. But he's the Million Dollar Man, you know?
Exactly.
Like, Coco Beware and Hillbilly Jim, no disrespect to them, but they're in the Hall of they're in the WWE Hall of Fame. And I don't, did Hillbilly Jim ever win anything? He had a match at WrestleMania 3 that went to a no contest. But it's Hillbilly Jim. Like, people know him.
Exactly.
Hall of Fame worthy doesn't necessarily mean good. It just means people know you and have fond memories of you. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if John Morrison is going to go into the Hall of Fame one day, right? Like,
oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
But he's probably never won the WWE title. Dolph Ziggler got hot for a year, and he's going to be a Hall of Famer one day. And yes, Dolph Ziggler has won everything. Maybe he's a bad example, but Dolph Ziggler isn't Christian, you know?
No, he's not.
He's also not Edge. He's not Shawn Michaels. He's not any of these people that you think of when you think Hall of Fame worthy.
God, I love Christian.
Christian rules.
Christian rules.
So it was just like, I was kind of just like on the side of like, it would be cool if it was him. And I'm going to temper my expectations because if it's not him, I don't want to be disappointed. And it was. So we're here.
I'm happy about it. I'm not really going to watch ever, but I'm excited.
I will probably watch this week just to know what's going to happen. Because every so often I give Dynamite another chance because I have such a hard time watching weekly wrestling shows. Like, they just don't do it for me. I've realized I'm much more, hey, I'll keep up. I'll listen to people talk about it. I'll listen to a podcast or something where somebody says, hey, here's what happened with Dynamite. Cool, I'll do that. But I'm not much for watching these shows week to week. I have better uses of 2 hours every Wednesday. You know, I'll check in this week and see if they can't hook me, but eh. Anyway, we're 30 minutes into this thing. What have you been up to? What have you been consuming?
Well, besides, oh my God, so much. Well, when I have free time, it's dedicated to studying or working out or both, or at this very moment, watching Babylon 5, which is a lot of fun.
That's very up your alley, I think.
Dude, it's fucking good.
That's so it's your like so sci-fi good. Bag.
Oh yeah. It's I don't know, because you know, I watched all of like main Star Trek. I haven't finished TOS yet, but I've been watching TNG. Like the pandemic last year, like pre-COVID into COVID. I was like, you know, getting into Star Trek, and I watched Voyager first, and I was like, oh, this is great. I think we actually tried to talk about this on the last podcast, but I was using like the worst.
Yes. Like, so
I was using like,
you
the
and
worst
I tried to record this. We tried to record this what had to be like 4 or 5 months ago, and your microphone situation was so bad that it was like the microphone worked, the headset didn't. So we're trying to record this episode, and at this point, like, I might have lost the recording, all honesty. There is like a point where you are talking and trying to get the headset back, and I am just like going, oh, that's interesting. Like trying to talk to fill the space.
That was so fucking funny. I was like, calm. It went on to 5 minutes where
we gotta cut it. This isn't gonna work.
Yeah, we were like, this isn't gonna work out. But this time, I'll be able to actually like talk about. I'm so excited because I fucking love Star Trek. Like I've fallen in love with this franchise just like a year, and a little over a year and a half, and it's been worth it. I watched Voyager first, then I jumped to TNG, because I was like, all right, let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to watch TNG. So me and Al are watching TNG, and I love TNG. I fall in love with TNG. I'm like, I love Picard. I love Data. I love fucking Riker. That slut. he's a slut. Let's just be honest.
That slutty Riker.
He's like, I'm gonna go to Ryza for on my off day. Really rough sex. Why not? And I'm like, you know what?
Good for you.
I was gonna say, good for you. You know what? That's fantastic. And then he's like, you know, he's smizing all the fucking time. He smizes so hard. I love Riker so much. He's like, and he plays the trombone. He toots real good.
He toots as he pleases.
You have Geordi, which is
Geordi, the best dude. The best.
Geordi's the fucking best. His romance episodes are awkward as shit, but he's so lovely. He's such a delight. He's just so friendly. Like, I want to be Geordi's friend. I want to be Data's friend, but I want to be Geordi's friend more because he's so positive. God. I love Deanna Troi, as useless as they wrote her to be sometimes. I like her a lot. I like Beverly Crusher. Who else is on the fucking show? Worf. Worf! Worf fucking rules. I gotta say, he's a delight. But I watched TNG. I finished it. I was done with it. It's put it on the shelf. It's over. And I'm like, okay, we have one more. Deep Space Nine.
And this is your shit.
This is my. I didn't know anything about Deep Space Nine. I had no idea about. I knew that it was a space station, and that because I watched TNG before Deep Space Nine. There's a small crossover episode, very very tiny, and it's where Data is starting to. You don't care about spoilers, do you?
No.
Okay, because it's fucking just. It's been out for like 30 years now, so. Data is starting. He's an android. You know, he was created by a Noonien Soong, this exceptional cyberneticist, and he made Data, and he's like a positronic brain and everything, and he's starting to dream. He's starting to have dreams and visions, and he's starting to like think of like these different things. And there's an episode where Bashir shows up. Bashir is the doctor of Deep Space Nine. He's the chief medical officer. You know, he's like this young guy, and he's talking to Data about dreams and stuff. And this is like my first introduction to it. I think later in the episode, Worf is on Deep Space Nine, but I don't know anything about Deep Space Nine. I'm like, I don't know. I know
very little about Deep Space Nine. And I knew. It's funny because I think everything I know about Deep Space Nine, I know from following Meg.
Oh my god, yeah. fucking Meg. Odo and Quark. Like I knew some of it.
Yeah, like I know about Odo and Quark.
Odo, Quark.
Whoopi Goldberg is there.
Oh my god, Whoopi Goldberg. Oh my god. Whoopi Goldberg is TNG, I think. TNG.
I thought she was in Deep Space Nine.
Dude, could you imagine? Oh. The black excellence on that show. All right,
the Cisco kicks ass.
I'm gonna get to him. He gets this whole separate. He's like, it's right there. I'm getting ready for him. I love Cisco, but I didn't know anything about it. I didn't even know about like the captain or the commander actually. So we start this up, and it immediately starts. Now I don't know if anyone, I don't know if you know, like you know, the Battle of Wolf 359. I'm butchering it. The Battle of Wolf 359. It's like from Best of Both Worlds. It's the big Borg episode where, you know, Picard gets assimilated. And it starts off, this Deep Space Nine starts off with a flashback of that battle where Borg is entering Federation space and trying to head towards Earth. And you have all these Federation ships trying to stop it. Fucking like you have... Cisco as the commander of one of them. They're trying to beat it. Everything goes wrong. They have to evacuate the ship. Cisco gets to his son, but not to his wife. His wife dies. Ugh. And that's how it starts. And you're like, this huge loss. 6 years later, whatever. five, six years later. I can't remember. And Sisko's being reassigned to Deep Space Nine. It's formerly a Cardassian military outpost. Now, if you don't know who Cardassians are, they're space Nazis. They're fucking space Nazis. That's what they are. They're fucking space Nazis. And recently, the Bajorans, who are like, you know, this oppressed class, who were oppressed by the Cardassians, recently managed to get their fucking world back from the occupation of Bajor. They managed to fucking save Bajor. These Bajorans, love them, love the Bajorans. And Bajor wants help from the Federation, so the Federation brings Sisko over, and they start like trying to set it up, and it's a shit heap at first. It's Deep Space Nine's a fucking shit. It's like, it's there's like fucking garbage everywhere. Jake, Sisko's son, goes into one of the rooms and he's like, "There's no bed, Dad. There ain't no bed. How can I sleep with no bed?" All this shit's going on. But as the series goes along, it just evolves, you know. So like when you get to the last episode, it's not what it once was. It's not like with the Enterprise where like, yeah, Tasha Yar's dead. You know, that's the one big change, really.
Right.
You still have the same crew. They're going on the same adventures and stuff. This here, it's just like Sisko changes so much as a character.
Which you don't get with Star Trek in general, I find. Like, Star Trek, I think...
it's very self-contained.
The little bit of Star Trek I know, because, like, my grandmother loves TNG. Loves TNG. So I used to watch a lot of it with her. It's very static.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like the absolutely. Characters don't change. Like even through like the movies, they don't.
No, really change.
Like Picard becomes a Borg, and is still just Picard.
dude, it's actually surprising because like that kind of incident, like for a character, if that happened on like Babylon 5 or fucking Deep Space Nine, they would be living with that. It would have just fucking changed their character for the rest of the
show. If that happened on fucking Power Rangers.
Oh my God. Dude, it'd be fucking, it would have changed like everything. I just bumped my microphone, but just fucking, it would have been so much different. Like, so it's very static.
Like I'll use Power Rangers Wild Force as an example, because a similar thing happens in that show where Merrick sacrifices himself, becomes Zenaku, and then 1,000 years later, when he gets woken up, is still Zenaku, the fucking wolf warrior, kicks the shit out of the Power Rangers for like 15 episodes or something. I don't think it's that long. I might be exaggerating. But, like, he's a problem they have to deal with. And then when they free him, Merrick's just weird. Like, he sleeps at the pool hall. Like, he's weird.
Holy shit.
Because the world changed without him. And he doesn't fit in the world now. And he doesn't really trust himself after he became Zenaku. So now he's like, they want him to come with them to the Animarium. They want him to stay with them. And Princess Shayla's like, "Hey, it's okay. I know that you didn't mean, like, you weren't you when that stuff happened." And he's like, "I don't trust myself. I gotta just be by myself. Cause I have to atone, and it's a lot of shit that shapes his character. Picard becomes a Borg. He gets assimilated. And then he comes back and he's just like, whatever, I'm still Picard. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, no, there's one, like, they kind of bring it up here and there, but it's not like, it's so weird how it's not a consistent thing. Obviously, you know, the producers wanted it to be like, okay, so anyway, they're able to, like, do all this stuff with, like, this one episode where it doesn't have to be baggage or whatever. And it's like, I get that. Because like it does get brought up again, like in Star Trek Picard, the one that came out last year, that show, you know, it got brought up there, got brought up in First Contact, where he's screaming and he's like an action hero. He's like there's a scene where he has his biceps out, and I'm like, holy shit, Sir Patrick.
But it's not like a constant thing.
No, it's not. It's
not like a thing that informs the way that his character just will be now.
Absolutely. And when it comes to Sisko, he changes so much when it gets into the Dominion War and the things that he has to do to win the war. It gets fucking crazy. He starts off as, you know, like this, like, you know, someone who doesn't want it. Like at the start of the show, he doesn't, he's thinking of civilian service, thinking about like leaving Starfleet because he's that disillusioned with it. He has a conversation with Picard and he's like, "You've killed my wife," essentially.
Right.
It was Locutus who, you know, they used his knowledge to find, you know, all this information about, you know, Federation defenses and shit. Fucking like essentially blamed him for his incredibly cold to Picard. And it feels like at the end of the show, if Picard and Sisko had met again, it would have been totally different. And they just would have kind of, you know, gotten along more or less. Not only just that, but like his demeanor, you know, like everything about him. There's actually this one episode, and a lot of people call it the best Star Trek episode. I think it's one of the best Star Trek episodes. I don't think it's the best one, but it's definitely up there. It's called In the Pale Moonlight. And yes,
yes, it is a reference to
Dance with
the Devil in the Pale Moonlight.
Absolutely. It totally is. In this episode, Sisko has to do some unsavory things to bring the Romulans into the Dominion War. And what transpires is fucking crazy. It's something that you wouldn't see like Picard do. It's something you wouldn't see Janeway or Kirk do. They're in the circumstances, you know, like Sisko's in, where he's essentially like he's commanding the first border, like for a war. Like this is the first line of defense against like them just showing up and taking shit over. So he essentially, oh my god, it's so much to get into, but he essentially bribes is an accessory to murder, and on top of that just like goes under the table and does all this fucking shady shit to get the Romulans into the war. And it doesn't go the way he thinks because he has this chaotic kind of like sidekick along the way, Garak. Now, if anyone doesn't know who Garak is, one of the best Star Trek characters ever. He's a delight. He's the gayest Cardassian ever. And he's wonderful. He's one of the best characters just because like he lies so much, but he's also like tacitly telling the truth in some ways while he's lying. It's crazy. He's just like a super spy with, you know, a lot of baggage. So Sisko does all this shit and he enlists the help of Garak, and Garak's like, why don't we just kind of like make this fake document or fake like holo recording of this Dominion meeting where they're gonna fucking kill the Romulans or they're gonna attack Romulus. Okay, let's do that. So they hired this shady fucking like Khan from the Klingon Empire. He's like supposed to be captured by the Klingon Empire and bring him in, and he's supposed to like rig up this fake recording. It's like fake video, you know, that they're going to try to send to the Romulans and be like, "Oh, this is actually happening." And it doesn't work. The senator gets there. He talks to Sisko, and I'm kind of like paraphrasing. There's so much that happens, but mm-hmm. He gives him the holo recording. He's like, "Here you go." Sisko's like, "Here you go. Now I have to wait." He gets called in. The Romulan senator's like, "This is a fake. And I'm going to tell my people that you fucking faked this. You're done. It's over." Dude, it's so fucked. It's funny because in a prior scene, like he has the senator drinking some fake like Romulan ale, and he's mm-hmm. like, "Oh, you know, it's not real. I know it's not real, but for a second there, you know, and just drinking it, I feel like it's real, but I know it's not." And he's like, "It's, you know where this is going."
Yep. It's like he's so not fucking buying it.
No, he's not. And. And he doesn't. they find out it's a fake, even though Garrick was like, there's no way that they're gonna find out this is a genuine.
It's literally that fucking thing where it's like, they're gonna find out. How would they find out? They're gonna find out.
Yeah, exactly. And they really find out, and it's crazy. You know, I was shocked. And he leaves, the Romulan senator leaves, and Sisko is just like left, like, oh my god, this is going to destroy. This is going to destabilize everything.
This is going to be we're never going to recover.
Never. Like, the Federation's done. The war is done at this point. Like, they can totally just attack. The Romulans have, like, could totally, like, just, like, fucking attack or something. Or the Dominion can attack them because of this is fucked up. So, Sisko's like, I guess I just gotta deal with this. And he's just, you know, there's nothing he can do. And then he gets news that a shuttle containing a Romulan senator exploded on its way to Romulus.
Holy shit.
It explodes, right? And he's like, are you serious? So he goes in, he walks into Garrick's because Garrick's a tailor. He deals with clothing. He walks into Garrick's shop and punches him right in the fucking mouth. And he goes, I know you did something. Now, earlier in the episode, Sisko orders Bashir to give the chief medical officer that I mentioned earlier, to give him biomimetic gel, a bunch of packs of them. Now, biomimetic gel can be used for many different things, including explosions. And Garrick's like, earlier in the episode, it's like, we need this biomimetic gel. We need it because this is the only way I can use to trade for the little data rod or whatever. So we can actually give it to them. Oh, all right, fine. All right, I'll see what I can do. He gets the biomimetic gel. He gives it to Garrick. Garrick blew up the fucking shuttle.
he said they're not going to find out.
He's like, don't worry. They're not. They're not going to find it. It'll be fine. And Sisko beats. Like, he punches Garrick a few times. And Garrick's like, look. We're going to win the war. Because the Romulans, when that happened, they saw it as a Dominion threat. So guess what they did? They started bombing Dominion shipyards.
Oh, Jesus, fuck.
So they're on side of the war. So it's the Klingons, the Federation, and the Romulans at this point, all together against the Dominion. That means that they're going to win the war. There's more of a chance they're going to win the war. But as Garrick says, all it costs is... God, what is that line? It's a couple of things, but... He mentions at the very end the self-respect of one Starfleet officer. So in this framing device for the episode, it's Sisko trying to, he's sitting alone in a room and he has the computer recording his personal log. Cause you know, there's a captain's log and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's trying to record it. Cause he's like, I can't talk to anybody about this. I have to air it out right now. So he's talking about it in a personal log, and he's like, even with all of that, I think I can live with it. And I think the last line, he just repeats himself. He's like, I will live with it. And ooh. Then he deletes the log. And for your main character to... This is the guy that I've been rooting for like 5-6 seasons up to this point. This is, I think, in season 6. This is at the near the end of the show. For him to go to those lengths where he bribed and he lied and he aided a murder of a Romulan senator. Jeez, and that he's gonna have to
You're gonna carry that weight.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, you're gonna carry that weight. And for that to happen, it's just like, it's things like that where it's like and it sits with him because like there are episodes where they mention, because like back in like the first 3 seasons, he's very plucky, he's very, you know, he's plucky and in some ways, but he's also very, you know, like he's a commander, you know, and right. He wears his emotion on his sleeve, and as that happens, the emotions that he wears on his sleeve aren't of, you know, let's make the most of it, let's try to figure things out. It's more of, we're doing this, that's the end of it, you know. he is a little playful here and there. There's a there's an episode where he's actually on the holodeck singing, but it's like for the most part he's like, you know, fucking like he's mean, and even his crew brings up that he's mean. They don't call him Cisco; they call him the captain at that point because, you know, things have changed. So it's very, very crazy. That's one thing I like about Cisco. I also like that he brings up like race issues sometimes. Yeah. Like when there's this Vegas holodeck thing where I think it's run by, God, I forgot the guy's name. It's this holodeck guy who can sing a lot, and he's like, hey, what's going on, buddy? What's going on, Palio? And it's like run 24 hours a day, and there's currently like a problem with it. And Cisco's like, I'm not going in there because back in the day, they wouldn't let black folks into that club.
Right.
And back in the day.
And so that brings up something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, which is that like when a character is black, you can't not mention that they are black.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You can't ignore that. But simultaneously, I'm almost of the mind that like a black character needs to allow to be themselves first, you know, like
absolutely,
like, and how do I put this? A black character can't just be black character. So in this case, he needs to be Cisco, who is a black man, but is also a Star Trek captain.
And that's...
is also a father.
The beauty of it.
Also,
yes.
A widower is also all of these things.
Absolutely.
He can't be these things individually. He has to be the totality of himself.
That's the thing. Absolutely. You're fucking hitting the nail right on the head right now.
Like, they brought this up in... in one of the first issues of Spider-Man when Miles switched universes. So when he came over from the Ultimate Universe into the main timeline, they did this. There's this thing where one of his classmates, this girl Danica, who's like a vlogger or whatever, she discovers that the new Spider-Man is black. And she doesn't know who he is, but she knows that he's black. And so she's like calling him the Black Spider-Man and all this. And Miles has this line that a lot of people got really upset about, I remember, where Miles is like basically lamenting that he is the Black Spider-Man. And he's like, why can't I just be Spider-Man? Peter gets to be just Spider-Man. People have seen Peter with his costume ripped with part of his face exposed for years. Why is it that Peter is just Spider-Man and I'm Black Spider-Man? And like, that's something that's just really stuck with me, because why is it that the black character always gets the qualifier?
Horrible, right?
Like,
always. And that's the thing that I found so like amazing about Deep Space Nine and like the writing of Cisco is that he's all of these things, you know. Like when you see Cisco, he feels like a person, you know. It's not like I think Picard definitely is on some level, but you know, like Picard's white, you know, of course, you know, and he's one of the main characters, like the vocal point, you know. With Cisco, it's like he has baggage, he has flaws, he has all of these things, but he has so many wonderful things about him. You know, he's a damn good cook. He's the son of a cook from like this lovely New Orleans restaurant that's still going today. Mm-hmm. He's a good father. He's like a damn good commander. He loves baseball. He's a big fan of baseball. There's an episode called "Take Me Out to the Holodeck" where he has to teach his crew how to play baseball against the all Vulcan enemy team. Like, it's fucking, there's so much about him. So when Vulcan's, like,
Vulcan's playing baseball makes almost too much sense.
Dude, it's fucking what?
It's
amazing.
It's a logical sport.
It's a logical sport. It is. It's so, like, that episode's so great, but, like, he has interests, he has hobbies, he, you know, there's so much about him that makes him, like, you know, like, a person that when, like, any other situation, I would be like, this is a bit weird, you know, like, bringing up, you know, like, the racing, but it's, like, but he's so well, it's not like this, like, two-dimensional black character who's, like, saying this, it's, like, someone who they actually did a decent job of fleshing out and making an actual character. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I don't know if you watched it yet, but Far Beyond the Stars, that's the best Star Trek episode of all time.
Yeah, I gotta go through just to watch Deep Space Nine. Like, and I was gonna watch TNG all the way. I'll send you
some episodes.
Yeah, please do. But like, I was gonna start with TNG, but there's so much of it, and like, it's weird because like, I know that I just want to get to Deep Space Nine, you know?
That's the thing. Yeah, absolutely. They're so good. It's Deep Space Nine's wonderful. And when I finished Deep Space Nine, I was like, I don't know where else to go. I don't know what else to do. I'm so upset. You know, I miss my big space station full of fun characters, of interesting, well-detailed characters who go through these arcs, like, where can I find my fix? And then I found Babylon 5. Then I found Babylon 5. And that's my new fucking favorite thing. Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine get a lot of comparisons. Mainly of Deep Space Nine being, not Deep Space Nine, but Babylon 5 being ripped off to make Deep Space Nine. Because I know that the creator of Babylon 5 actually put his little script in to Paramount Pictures, and then like they had it for a whole year, so they could have easily just lifted shit from it. And there's a bunch of comparisons, and it's essentially kind of the same premise for the first season. It's a space station in neutral territory where aliens and humans coexist and try to find peace after a really bad war. Right? That's the basis. You know, in a war where Earth and humans almost got wiped from existence. Jesus. Fucking crazy. Fucking just like nuts. The first season is it's fine. People don't like it very much. Some Babylon 5 fans would probably tell you, hey, you should start with the second season instead. I wouldn't. The first season is needed.
There's so many shows that are like that. That's such like that's such a turnoff for me off on any show of like, oh, the first season is really not good. Skip to the second. I'm like, no, that seems like it sucks.
That's the thing. Same thing with TNG and Deep Space Nine, Voyager. The first two seasons of those shows are fucking awful, but you should still watch them, and then you should rewatch them after they're over, because you can at least like, you can actually, you have a good solid understanding of the characters, so you can appreciate what's being watched more. Obviously with TNG you can't enjoy some of season one because it's just very 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 very
bad. That was my that was kind of what happened with me, where I was like, oh, I'll just start TNG, and I was just like, I got like 15 minutes in the first episode. I was like, this seems like it sucks.
Yo, the first episode of TNG is fucking garbage.
What season is the episode with Tuvix?
Oh, Tuvix is Voyager season 2.
Okay.
And fuck yeah, Tuvix. Janeway killed like, Tuvix.
Janeway killed Tuvix.
Janeway literally murdered. She ordered
Tuvix
him.
Tuvix is like begging, please don't kill me. And he's like, Janeway's like,
he's running.
I need my people back. But I'm not two people. I'm one person.
Literally, he's his own. You can't split him. He's his own. No, Janeway's like, fucking cut him in half right now. And
Myself.
I'll do it myself, Doctor. It's crazy, actually.
Janeway
when it comes
should
to
have
Tuvix.
A New Jersey accent.
What are you talking about?
Okay.
F shields. But back to Babylon 5. Fucking awesome show. It's so good. I can't spoil it. I can't, even if I wanted to, because it's such a good show. Like, I recommend it to everyone, but I can't say anything about it. Watch the first season. Do your best to get through it. Once you get to season two's, it gets good. It gets interesting. There are a bunch of like narrative trapdoors that happen that make it very interesting. They were not intended, but like they do make the show cooler. And then work your way to season three and four, where it's like one of the best fucking shows I've ever seen in my life. And then maybe watch season five, even though season five is not that good, because they didn't intend for it to be five seasons. Well, they did, and then it wasn't going to get a fifth season. They actually had to push everything into season four. So when you watch season four and you're like, oh my god, this is amazing, I love this, that's why. And then season five is just kind of like TNT bought it, and then Babylon 5 season five happened, and it's just kind of okay, fine. It's kind of good. It gets good. But it's not like season four, where it's just like fucking incredible. God, what else? What else have I been watching? Besides Babylon 5, just rewatching Deep Space Nine because it fucking rolls so much. I'm going to send you a bunch of episodes.
Yes.
Please. My recommendation for episodes at this very moment for people watching, or not watching, listening at home, The Visitor. These are all Cisco episodes. The Visitor. It's actually, this is a Jake Cisco episode. It's not. It's about something awful happening to his father. And things happen. And I will sell you on this, not just because it is a Jake Cisco episode, a great just Jake Cisco episode that features a lot of, you know, Benjamin Cisco, but Tony Todd's in this episode.
What?
Tony fucking Todd guest stars in this episode. He's actually Worf's brother in TNG. He's what is his name? I'm blanking on so many names today, but he's Worf's brother. Kern. Worf's brother Kern. He actually shows up in Deep Space Nine as well. So this is actually two roles he's playing. He plays another role in this episode. You have to watch it. It's called The Visitor. Then we're gonna hop on to Far Beyond the Stars, and it is a wonderful little episode about it's about a black sci-fi writer from the 1950s that comes up with the concept of Deep Space Nine.
Oh fuck, that's
just gonna incredible. Leave it there. I'm not saying anything else. That's just what gonna there. And then obviously the third one. Oh god. The third one would be trying to remember. Oh man, it's hard because there's so many good Deep Space Nine episodes. Fuck it, in the pale moonlight. All right, and these are all they all involve Cisco. So there you go. It's my Deep Space Nine rant. Star Trek and Babylon 5 are good.
So we're gonna, before we move on to some other stuff, we're gonna double back here because Tony Khan. Has so their explanation, they've explained away how shitty
it
is. Do you want to know what it is? So what's Moxley and Kingston in a video said, I guess we're lucky that Omega can't build a bomb worth shit. And Khan's like, yeah, he drew it up with like fucking crayons or something. They're basically just throwing. The pivot is that Kenny badly explained the plan for the explosion, or badly planned the explosion. And Moxley and Kingston sold because they're, and I've seen this happen doing theater with people.
Yeah.
Like I know a guy who once was supposed to get shot at with a gun with blanks in it. And even though he knew it was a blank in it, he still like reacted like not like, oh, I'm acting, I'm pretending. He thought for like 10 seconds he had really been shot.
Oh shit.
Cause it still sounds the same. So the reason they sold is because their bodies, they freaked out mentally of like, oh, fuck, it exploded. We're going to fucking die. Listen, I appreciate
them trying. I thought it was going to be legit.
I appreciate them trying to pivot and cover it up and just go like, all right, we can make this work with the story. It's
unbelievable.
If they want me to believe genuinely that was always the plan, they could go to hell. Because now they have to pivot away from Kenny wanted, instead of to try to kill his arch rival, he just wanted to make that arch rival think that he was trying to kill him, or that Kenny just sucks at designing a bomb. Which, why would Kenny be the one in charge of that?
That's what I'm wondering. I'm like, why would they even, like, this man, just because this man worked in Japan doesn't mean he knows how to rig up a good explosion death match.
All you have to do is...
I'm sorry, that match made me so mad. I'm gonna watch this. Ready? There you go. It's 1 a.m. I shouldn't have done that. But I banged the table for a reason.
It didn't pick up on the mic.
So. It didn't really.
Nope.
Did it actually work? I hope it worked.
A little bit. But just like...
I don't understand.
They can't even pass off as like a safety thing. Because like...
Nah,
they can't. We were talking about it earlier. In 2009, WWE did an angle where Jeff Hardy's pyro went off in his face.
That was fucking awesome.
Goldberg routinely walks through his own pyro and just stands there and lets it hit him.
Bragging rights happen. Bragging rights 09 that, the fucking Iron match that you told me about.
You could have just put a bunch of pyro outside the ring and had it go off, and then just you play a boom sound effect. You can do it safely. People have been doing this match for, 30 years? When was Onita and Funk? What year was that?
That was like... '80s? Like early 80s?
Yeah.
Maybe?
It's been almost 40 years people have been doing this match. You want me to believe that you didn't think you could do this safely, Tony Khan? You big mark.
Like, there's no fucking way. Like, I just don't understand how... I was gifting the fucking thing.
You were genuinely excited and then went, what the fuck was that? I was ready.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one. I thought I was I'm just being cynical. I thought I was just being cynical.
No, it was everybody.
I go on Twitter and everyone's like, this is like... I just saw a tweet. Just gonna say, better than the AEW explosion every time I come now.
Relax.
I know.
God.
But it's so good.
Okay, We're gonna move on.
All right.
We're
done this time. For real.
We're done with it for real this time. So there are a couple things that I've been... One thing I finished, a couple things I'm just doing. So I watched and completed interviews with Monster Girls. Which,
really?
Okay, so the thing about interviews with Monster Girls is I had to be convinced to watch it because the name implies something more sinister than it is.
Fucking Monster Girls.
It implies that it is some matter of pornography. It is.
Is that what that is?
It is the complete opposite. It is so wholesome. It is so wholesome. It's so just nice. A world where some people are just like fantasy people. So like the main character is a high school biology teacher who is, for his doctorate thesis, he's writing a paper about they're called demi-humans. So students at his school that he befriends. He befriends a vampire, a It's a vampire, a Dullahan, and a snow woman. And then there's a teacher at the school who is a succubus. And she is... Feisty. You would think so, right? No, this lady wears a tracksuit every day of her life. She gets...
What?
Yeah, she gets on the train early so she doesn't risk bumping into... Because the way it works in this universe is like, if she makes contact with a man, that man's just... He's just bricked up now. He's just horny now. And he's just
gonna... Oh, that's why she wears the tracksuit.
Right. It's so she... They call it her aphrodisiac effect. It basically to ward against that, she wears a tracksuit so she's covered up all day. She takes the early train so she doesn't risk... She takes the earliest train to work possible and the last train home. She lives out in the woods because when she sleeps, she can give people nearby dreams. And so she's
what
like...
What the fuck?
Yeah, so she like lives out in the middle of the woods so she doesn't do that. Like, just goes out of her way to just be a good teacher and also to not, like, use her powers on anybody.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah. That's so good.
The wow, vampire girl has a twin who is just human. Like, she wasn't turned into a vampire. She just is a vampire. She was born a vampire. And so it's like, she's just really sensitive to light. And she hates when it's hot out. She burns really easily.
I see.
So she's natural friends with the Snow Woman, who is just a girl with ice abilities. And she's just...
Oh my god, okay.
Yeah. It's very good.
I'm looking at the Wikipedia right now.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's such... Like, legit, it's just really cute and wholesome, and I had a really good time watching it. Like, if you like slice of life, coming of age stories... that's a show you should watch. It's 12 episodes, 13 episodes. It's really...
That's
really
not bad good. At all.
Yeah.
I got to finish them up. I go 200. 200? I was going to say 202. 102?
100 season 2.
300? Yeah, that one.
And like the thing is, like, everybody... Well, not everybody, but like... So the succubus and the snow... Or and the Dullahan, who's just a girl whose head and body are not attached. Which is fun for hijinks, for bits, because she can control her body independently, so she can leave her body in another place and control what it does. But the succubus and the Dullahan both have big crushes on the biology teacher, and it's... It, like, in the case of the student, it's very much played for laughs. Like, she likes him because he's a sweet, polite man. With big arms. And she's like...
The big arms.
She's just a schoolgirl with a crush on her teacher that is not going to go anywhere. And they make it very clear. Like, and that was the... When that storyline kind of popped up, I was very worried. Like, oh, fuck. Are they gonna...
Yeah. I did. They It happens so much, like those kinds of storylines. You would be forgiven to think, oh, this is probably going to end really weird and gross.
This is going
to
get gross. And it's like, it doesn't. Like, he hugs her, pats her on top of the head. But, like, it makes it very clear that his interest is in the other teacher. And even then, it doesn't really go anywhere in the show. Maybe in the light novels it does, but it's... It's just a really good show. I banged it out in like a weekend while I was doing other stuff.
Shit, man. I have a lot of time off. Might as well fucking...
Yeah, just power through that.
Power through some shit.
And then the couple games I've been playing. I picked up Persona 5 Strikers.
Oh, I've heard about... Is that the battling game?
It's the Warriors
game. Action fighter.
Did you ever...
That fucking looks awesome.
Did you ever beat
people? No. No. Okay. No, so, I should have. Yeah. I should have, but I
you
didn't.
Should, you should beat Royal, the re-release. Ooh. Yeah. It's got 30 more hours of content. It's legitimately...
Are you fucking serious?
I'm dead
That's
serious.
So much.
It added a whole extra month, a whole new dungeon, a new character. They reworked some of the Confidant stuff. They re-recorded most of the lines in the game. Characters have new stuff.
What the shit?
Yeah, it's rad.
I guess I might as well get that. Yeah.
But Strikers is a sequel. Like, it seemed like... oh, this is just going to be Warriors with Persona 5 skin. Like, as somebody who's played a lot of these, like, third-party Warriors games, I played a ton of fucking Dynasty Warriors Gundam. That shit is not connected to anything. It's just Dynasty Warriors with Gundams. This, though, Persona 5 Strikers, is... It might as well be Persona 5 Part 2.
Really? Okay.
It takes
place... It actually follows right after the main story?
3 or 4 months after the main story ends. Like, the main story ends in March. This takes place in late July.
Oh, okay. Holy fuck.
So it's like, hey, a couple of your party members graduated high school and went off to college. They're coming back. Your main character left at the end of the story, end of the first story. He came back, and you're all gonna go on a trip for summer vacation. Except, oh no, there's a new problem that only the Phantom Thieves can solve. So they go to deal with that.
That's awesome.
And like, you're not just running through like fields of enemies. You still do random battles, where it's like, hey, that guy. Ambush him, take his mask off, get the drop on him, do an all-out attack. You're casting your spells, you're switching personas. It's just an action game Persona 5.
And that's awesome. Pretty cool,
'cause you get to play as all your party members. You get to just switch between them. So like Joker plays like you would expect him to play. Like, he plays pretty close to how he plays in Smash, where he's a lot of just knife, gun, Arsene, do your thing. Ryuji has a lot of, like, a lot of his moves are do a couple hits and then charge up for a big move that does a lot of damage. Makoto rides her motorcycle persona around the battlefield. Haru's got a lot of, like, big AoE stuff. Yusuke is Virgil.
Really?
Yusuke is Virgil fuck? As shit. Like, you do Judgment Cut.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Like, you hold triangle as Yusuke, and you do Judgment Cut.
Oh, that's my fucking... That was my favorite move in DMC3 Special Edition. Oh,
it's the fucking coolest. And they gave it to... Coolest. They gave it to Yusuke here.
That's fucking great.
Everybody is in and playable. As far as I am right now, I'm maybe 7 or 8 hours in. The only characters you don't play as... You don't play as Futaba, obviously.
Yeah.
Because that's not... She doesn't fight. And how far did you... I don't want to spoil this. How far did you get in P5?
Not very far. I think it was right... It was the night before, or it's like the night of when they're about to like do their big like thing on the abusive teacher guy.
Okay, you're super early. Okay.
Yeah,
super early. One of your later game party members... isn't in the game, which there are story reasons as to why he is not there. And then the new character who's introduced in Royal isn't there, because this game was in production at the same time as Royal. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So they were in production at the same time. So she's just not there because she wasn't written in yet. And it came out before Royal did in Japan, I think.
Oh, I see.
Or it was at least promoted before Royal came out. So it was a tricky spot for them to be in. So there's some stuff that's just not there, which unfortunate, but it is what it is. It's a really good game. So far, from what I can tell. And for me, I realized how much I missed that cast. Because I feel like I've replayed Persona 5 in some form or fashion every year since it came out. Like, I beat it. Like, when it came out, it was the only game I played for, like, a month when Persona 5 first came out. 2016. Or 2017.
Oh, my God.
Came out April 4th, 2017. And then I replayed it in 2018. I want to say I replayed it a little in 2019. And then Royal came out in 2020. And then I beat Royal. And I was just sitting, like, lately, I've been kind of itching, like, man, I gotta replay Royal because I missed these characters. And then Strikers came out, and no one had told me until after it came out, like, this game is a sequel. So I was like, oh, cool, this is just new content with all these characters. Great, I will get right on that. And so for me, somebody who really likes Persona 5's cast and really missed them, it's really nice to be able to see them again and play with them again. Last thing I've been up to before we get into our main event of the evening.
Oh, shit, we have a main event. I forgot we had a main event.
Yeah, we're doing one more thing. I started playing Dragon Age 2 again.
Oh, did you? I was going to ask about something, and I'm so glad you brought up Dragon Age 2. I'm going to ask it after you talk about it.
Okay.
It's in the same ballpark as Dragon Age. It's not about it, but...
Okay. So Dragon Age 2 is a game that, when it first came out, a lot of people had a lot of feelings about it. I didn't play it till way later. The game came out in 2011, I think. I didn't play it until 2015. And I remember I really liked it up until a point. Like, that game, for me at least, peaked at the end of its second act. Because you get to do something that's really cool there, and then the third act just felt really underwhelming from there. And it's a big problem to me is that since you're playing in... The game is contained in the city of Kirkwall and the immediate area outside of it. It's like the smallest in terms of scope of all the Dragon Age games. Because Dragon Age Origins, you're going all across Ferelden, which is the country that you're in that game. You're going all over there. In Dragon Age Inquisition, you are all over Ferelden and Orlais and like all these weird places that maybe have been mentioned, but you don't ever go to before there. Origin or two, you are basically locked to Kirkwall, the Sundermount, like all the places that are around Kirkwall and under Kirkwall in certain cases. But you're pretty much localized to that city. And so I remember just being like, I'm so tired of seeing these same environments all the time. But so far, I've been playing it on stream. And so far, I have been liking it a lot more. Whether that'll stick or not, we'll see. But I as I'm playing, I'm remembering like, fuck, I love this cast. Like Meryl and Isabella and Fenris and Aveline. I really like, and it's kind of weird they didn't come back, because, like, Inquisition, they brought in a character from one, or they brought in a couple characters from the first game, and the two characters they bring in from two are Varric, who's a party member, and then Cassandra, who is just around, like, she's just there. And so they bring them back, but, like, everyone else is just kind of mentioned, so, like... Like, they're like, oh, yeah, like, Hawk, the main character of 2, also shows up briefly. And it's like, how's Meryl? Or how's whoever you romanced? So in my case, since I romanced Meryl, it was like, how's she? What's going on there? But it's, I'm enjoying it a lot more so far than I did before. The big change that you get from going from Origins to 2 is that Origins plays like all the old BioWare RPGs in terms of combat. Like it plays like Baldur's Gate, it plays like KOTOR. And you push a button, they do the attack, and then you wait. You do your next move. Versus in this, where it's a lot more active, a lot more involved in terms of the combat. And then the like conversations, instead of being like Mass Effect's problem, and I talked about this a few episodes ago. I talked about when I was playing Mass Effect 2. Mass Effect's big thing was the Renegade Paragon system.
And I hear about that a lot.
And Dragon Age, it's like there's like favor with your party members where they either like you or don't, depending on how you, depending on the kind of person you are and the kind of things you do. So like if you side with, like in Inquisition, if you side with like the mages, Vivian and Cullen are like, hey, well, not Cullen because he's not a party member in that game, but like Vivian and like Solas are like, hey, what the hell are you doing? And it's like, mind your business. That's what I'm doing. Fuck you.
Mind your business.
Mind your business. But your choices aren't, they're not good answer, bad answer. It's like kind answer, comical answer, emotional answer, or firm, tough answer.
I see. So there's more? There's more options altogether?
Yeah, yeah, and it just kind of informs your character's personality, which I think is pretty cool.
It's very cool.
What were you going to ask?
I was going to ask you about Mass Effect, actually. I don't know how many times I've asked you this. I don't know, like, if I've asked many people this, because it's always a franchise I've never, ever touched, ever. Mm-hmm. But I know that Babylon 5 inspired it.
Yes.
Part of the reason is I really want to watch it for that, like, or not watch it, but play it for that reason. And I actually, like, I have a copy of the first one. Should I just go for it?
I think you should wait a couple months, or I think it comes out next month. They're remastering the first three games.
Oh, fuck, that's right. Legendary something edition?
Yeah, Mass Effect Legendary Edition.
Fucking A, that's crazy. I didn't even realize.
So you should wait for those to come out and just play those instead. Cause the first game aged poorly. Like just visually. Oh, it looks very 2008. Fucking very, A. Very early 360. It aged weirdly visually, and I personally don't like the combat in the first game a lot. And so hopefully they kind of changed it to match the other games for the remaster, yeah. But who knows?
Isn't that continuing, by the way? Isn't that like a thing that's continuing, like Mass Effect?
That's possible.
I don't know. I didn't even know it ended, but like I saw there was like a trailer being like, oh, it's going to keep happening.
Well, I know Dragon Age 4 is coming out. Mass Effect, you might have seen the trailer for the remaster stuff. This is kind of a test. Capcom used to do this where it's like, hey, you want this thing? We'll buy this other thing and we'll make it. So like the test for
really
for like when they did the Resident Evil 2 remaster, the test was kind of the Resident Evil 0 HD port. It was like, all right, are people really interested in Resident Evil or are people just saying this? And so
when that
sold really well, they're like, all right, let's do it, Resident Evil 2. And then when that sold really well, they're like, let's do it, Resident Evil 3.
Fucking A, Resident Evil 3. I haven't played that. I have it, but I've heard mixed things about it.
I have also heard mixed things about the remaster. I've heard mixed things, like I've heard people complaining about Jill's new look.
And I've heard
valid things like, they move a lot of stuff around and the structure of the game doesn't really add up the same way anymore. It's valid.
Yeah.
I actually forgot there was one more thing I wanted to talk about, and now it's slipping my mind in real time.
No.
It's cool. It'll come back to me. But yeah, people were like just being weird about Resident Evil 3 when that remastered.
Yeah, definitely. And, I heard a lot of valid complaints, but yeah, like you said, I've heard a lot about that. But her new outfit,
which who cares? The other thing I was going to talk about. Remember how I once explained to you the story in the NBA 2K games and how it was dumb as shit?
Yeah. Oh my god, that was iconic.
I've been playing Madden 21, and you want to talk about bad dumb stories?
Are you serious?
Oh, Madden 21's so. Their career mode is called Face of the Franchise, where you are either a quarterback, a wide receiver, or a halfback, depending on what you want to do. Why anyone would pick anything but quarterback is beyond me. But so you the star offensive player. You start as your character in high school, which is very funny because my character looks 27 and is supposed to be 16. You start off in high school. You're the backup quarterback behind a guy who is like, he's getting scouted really heavily. He's the best player on the team. Everyone has expected him to go to college and be great and go to the NFL. Homecoming game comes along and you're like, hey, Tommy, you're playing like shit out there. You good? You're playing like you got no heart. And he's like, don't talk about my heart. I have a congenital heart defect.
Yo, shut the fuck up, really?
Yes.
What the fuck?
Yeah, all right. He's like, I have a heart defect. Don't talk about my heart. That's why I'm kind of sluggish, because I need to have surgery and get a valve replaced. And he's like, don't tell coach. And you're like, all right, Tommy, you have a choice. You can either go tell coach right away.
I was going to say, you can tell him if you want. Right.
And so I chose at first, you know what, Tommy, I'm not going to say anything. And then he goes out there and he keeps stinking up the joint. And then you go to the coach, you're like, listen, Tommy's not playing well because Tommy's sick. Tommy's heart is bad. You have to take him out of the game before he hurts himself trying to force himself to play with a heart defect. And he gets mad at you because he's like, you're just trying to take my spot. It's like, no, dude. I didn't want you to die. Go have surgery. You
fucking start flailing on the field.
Right. So then you win the game. You can lose. I didn't. And then you get named the starter for the rest of the year. You go off. You play in the high school state championship. You win. And then Tommy shows up. And Tommy's like, hey, I'm back. But the team list seems pretty good without me or with you at quarterback. So I'll just play receiver. But he's also like, as soon as coach leaves rooms, he's like, hey, you know, it was bullshit that you told coach that I have heart, a bad heart. And it's like, motherfucker, what do you want me to do, Tommy? Just pass me the ball a lot in the showcase game. Okay, whatever. Then some time goes by. And then you come to your college signing day. And it's like, what college do you want to go to? And it doesn't really matter. It just kind of matters to, like, what college uniform you're playing. So, like, I picked Louisiana State, right? Because that was what was there. It was, like, Louisiana State, Miami, Alabama, Clemson. Just, you know, teams that are good. And so I picked Louisiana State. And Tommy picks whatever school you pick.
Really?
Because he wants to prove that he's better than you. Which you would think the way to do that would be to go somewhere else and beat us. No, he wants
to. No, I want to
take the starting job from you like you took it from me. Tommy, I took the starting job from you because you quit the team because coach said he wasn't going to play you because you had a heart disease. What? It's a different ballgame, Tommy. You get to college, they make you sit for 2 years, and then it's like, all right, neither of you are starting, you're going to rotate. So, like, 1 week you'll play, 1 week Tommy will play. You play in the semifinal game to get to the championship, and then in the championship, they put Tommy in the game. And then Tommy goes out because his heart is still bad. Tommy gets, they pull him out of the game down 9-3 in the fourth quarter. You win the game for the team. And then when Tommy's in the hospital, because now you're best friends, I guess, which surprised the shit out of me because it's been nothing but animosity the whole fucking game. Tommy asks you, like, to promise him, like, hey, stick around and next year we'll win it together. And then the day Tommy gets home from the hospital, the coach comes over and he's like, hey, so Tommy's going to be the starter next year, not you. So you can either go to the draft or you can play wide receiver next year. okay, I guess I'll play wide receiver next year because I promised my now apparent best friend that I would go and play, that I would come back and play with him next year. And then you win. And also, this is all told through the lens of your other roommate from college who is now like a reporter. He's interviewing you about it.
What
back in your high school gym. And then you get to the NFL. You, no matter how good you played in college, you had the choice of getting drafted either to a random team or to your favorite team. I got drafted by the Miami Dolphins because the Dolphins suck. And then you play a couple games, and it doesn't matter how good you play. You can do everything they want you to do, and you're still not going to be the starter till next year, at least. And then, so then it's like, oh, you played okay. You didn't make it into the playoffs or anything because you played for the fucking Dolphins. Who cares? And then you, now where I'm at, it's like, well, but now they start the team since they value you more. They're going to value your input and start picking up all these free agents that you want them to sign and trading for these guys. But then you don't play every game. They just skip you to random games. It's
what the fuck?
It's not as bad as NBA 2K16, which is still the worst I've ever played. And I feel like I told you about that. But in case you, listener at home, have forgotten, the NBA 2K16 story involves Spike Lee, your best friend trying to make a pass at your girlfriend, him blackmailing you.
So much happens.
Then he, in the next scene, like the next cutscene, like you go after that, you play a game, he's blackmailing you because the coach of the team is like, or the owner's like, cut him off or you're going to get fucking traded. So you tell him like, hey, you got to chill out. And he's like, I'm going to take your car and I'm going to blackmail you with the time you killed somebody in self-defense. And then in the very next scene, like you play a game, the next cutscene, you just signed your new contract, and then the police call you and they're like, hey, are you the owner of this car? Yeah. It's totaled. It is in pieces. It's like, hey, where's Vic? He was driving that car. Oh, Vic's fucking dead.
And then, like, what the fuck?
And then Vic's ghost reads his own eulogy.
Just a mess. Like, I don't know how.
People were trying to tell me the story was good when it first came out. And then I played it and went, this is the worst fucking thing I've ever seen in my life. Stop letting. This made me not trust Spike Lee. I was like, he's washed. He does not have it anymore.
It's over.
If you like bad sports stories, play Madden 21.
There you go.
It's free on fucking Game Pass, which is the only reason I'm playing it, because it's on Xbox Game Pass.
Oh my god.
Okay. Last thing. You ready? Because we're going on an hour 45 now.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Oh, so
all right.
Let's make this as concise as we can. We both watched WandaVision.
Yes, finished it on Friday.
I also finished it on Friday.
Wow, fantastic.
That's a really good show. That's a pretty good show.
It's pretty good. It's a pretty good show.
You know, it's not. I feel like people came into it expecting it to be like this big, like, I think people came in kind of expecting it to be Infinity War, like, in terms of its, like, effect.
Yeah, everyone expected so many things that.
Oh, this honestly, is going to be the thing that introduces mutants. Chance. This is going to be the thing that introduces Mephisto. This is going to be
Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four is going to get introduced. All these things. And it's like, no, it is not. It is none of those things. It is a well-made TV show. And it kind of sets the bar, I guess, in terms of quality for how these MCU shows are going to go. Like Falcon and the Winter Soldier starts next week. Not this coming week, because this episode will come out like Tuesday. So not this week, but next week, I think Falcon and the Winter Soldier is going to sit. And it's going to be a way different tone, you know?
Yeah. It's going to be a lot different.
It set the expectation in terms of what we're going to get in terms of quality and in terms of, like, production.
In terms of scale, too,
yeah. Yeah, in terms I think, of scale, you know, like, because I think this is Falcon and the Winter Soldier is going to affect those two characters and maybe a couple side characters that are related to them somehow or characters that are related absolutely. To other characters. But I don't think that it's going to be, like when Captain America the Winter Soldier came out. That movie meant a lot because it had effects that were felt in other things. Like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. goes the way it goes. Like the first, I've watched a bit of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? I'm like halfway through like season three. Or I'm at the beginning of season three, I think. You can tell the episode that came out the week that, that Captain America the Winter Soldier came out.
Yeah.
Like it is very clear. Like, when you get to that point, oh, Winter Soldier just happened. The events of The Winter Soldier just happened. That movie just came out. I would love for Captain America, or for The Falcon and the Winter Soldier to introduce some characters. Like, I expect Isaiah Bradley to show up. Do you know who that is?
No, I know. Who's
so
that?
Isaiah Bradley is the Patriot. And
I've heard U.S. Agent is that
U.S. Agent
guy?
Is in that show. Yes, I think, I think Isaiah Bradley shows up, or Eli Bradley is his grandson. Isaiah is the Black Captain America when they were trying to recreate the experiment or when they were testing the experiment, and they tested it on black people. Tuskegee.
Yeah.
I fully expect like there to at least be a reference to Isaiah and Eli Bradley. Mm-hmm. I fully expect like I think at the end of this, because like basically what's happening is Cap gave him the shield, but he didn't say you're Captain America now, right? And so it's gonna be about him dealing with that. The two of them, they're not like, I think people are expecting them to like fight over it. Which is bizarre to me because Bucky seemed totally cool with it going to Sam.
Yeah. He was like he even was like, oh, that's for you.
Yeah.
Or he's like, he wants to talk to you, not to me.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a little bit of, you know, like one-upsmanship here and there. But I think
right, but that's just their established dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they're always trying to like outdo each other.
Right.
They're cute.
But let's kind of get into the details.
Oh God, WandaVision. Okay. So, how did you feel about last week's episode? Before we talk about this week's, let's talk about last week's. How did you feel about last week's? Because it is one of the most memed things I've ever seen in my life. One particular. A flashback, but like, how did you feel about the episode? Like,
episode eight itself? Or episode nine?
Episode eight.
Okay. I feel like episode eight tells you how episode nine is gonna go, and I feel like people missed that. Like, I think the second that Agatha says runes and explains how runes work, it's like, oh, this is gonna be how Wanda beats her. Got it. Understood.
Yeah, that was fun. That was interesting. I'm glad they threw that right in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad she used it to beat Agatha. I liked it. I also felt a little like weird about it because it was just like a lot of exposition right before the end. I know they had a lot of questions they had to like cover, but like in one episode it just kind of like I was like, wow. And Hayward sucks. Like, not even just like as a character, like a bad guy, but he just it's like, what blanket?
Yeah, and it's like it continues the tradition of it continues the tradition of no man in power in the MCU is trustworthy.
Literally. It just continues that.
And I was going to say except Fury, but especially Fury. Because
I was going to say especially Fury.
All those characters still think Fury is dead.
Yeah.
Or actually, is Fury at the funeral in Endgame?
Oh, no. Yeah, he is. He is at the
funeral. All those characters thought Fury was dead for years.
Yeah.
And also, all those characters still think Coulson is dead.
Yeah. Yeah, Coulson's still alive, isn't he?
Well, okay, so I don't know how Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. ends, but at least up until the point where Winter Soldier happens, at least up until after that, all those characters think that Coulson is dead. He what never talks fuck? To them.
And that's so weird to me. You know, an Endgame, like, I don't even, you know, no Coulson in Endgame, mm-hmm. you know. That was one thing that I found very weird. I was like, get Coulson in there. Yeah. Coulson, you know, little, you know, hey, how's it going, guys? Bye. You know,
like, hey, wait, what the fuck? You were alive this?
You know, no, yeah. It just Rogers being like, what? Wait, what? Hello? He's like, oh no, I gotta hang out with some other friends. I have new friends now.
Right.
See you around for like 5 years, by the way. But see you later.
Yeah, I know it's been like 5 or 6 years, but yeah, totally alive. See ya.
I have a click now. We're gonna get some brunch. They can't now, obviously.
Yeah,
but like,
go ahead.
Oh, I felt very weird about episode 8. Very conflicted because there was just a lot of exposition, but. You know, it did set up things for the Dragon Ball fight.
Yes. That is a Dragon Ball fight. That's a Dragon Ball
it
fight.
It totally like, is. It's fucking... She went full Goku.
Yeah.
She learned from the fight.
Yes. Like, people are going like, oh, I don't understand why they had to dedicate so much time to Vision and the Ship of Theseus thing.
I like that.
The people are like, it doesn't make sense. And it's like, he's a robot talking to himself. It totally makes sense. He also does this with... I want to say he also does this with Ultron in Age of Ultron. Where there's the...
At the very end.
Yeah, there's the conversation. That's a thing that is established as a thing that Vision does.
He's diplomatic. He's exercising diplomacy.
Yeah, he's a machine, man. He's logical, if nothing else.
So obviously he would know to try to reason with himself.
Right.
And I love that. That's my favorite scene in the whole episode, I gotta say.
It's
him winning the fight with very cute. They're in a library and it's a lot of philosophical concepts being thrown around.
Yeah.
Well, one not, specifically.
But. Yeah, one specifically. It's the way that character should have that conversation with himself.
Absolutely.
Like, it makes perfect Absolutely. Sense for that to be the thing that solves the issue.
Absolutely. I didn't know that there was such a problem with that scene either. This is the first I've heard that
people are not into it, which is bizarre to me. Because I guess everyone expects it to just be action all the time, you know, and it can't always be that. You have to. The moments like that are what make shows like that themselves. It's what makes them unique.
Yeah, it has to slow down.
It's like I talk a lot about Luke Cage. I find myself talking a lot about the first season of that show, just like in conversation. That show ends and then doesn't. And it overstays itself like crazy. Like, I think the biggest boon to WandaVision, and I hope they do this going forward with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, those episodes are 30 minutes. It's seven 30-minute episodes and then two 45-minute episodes. That's the way you do it. You don't need 12 one-hour episodes. Like, that was the biggest fault of Netflix shows to me, is that, like,
yeah,
all these shows are, like, especially with, like, Iron Fist, it was super noticeable of, like,
oh my god,
it's dragging.
Even with Daredevil on some level, you
Daredevil,
know?
Like, I think season 2 does that. And then
season 2 definitely did that.
Because Jessica Jones also, where Jessica Jones has a point where they can just solve the problem right there, but they have to get another hour out of it.
Oh my god, was that the first season?
First season, yeah. Where they've got him in the diner, and then
got him in the diner.
Don't deal with the problem.
And then they have him in the cell too, right?
Mm-hmm. They're like three times where they can just deal with him. But WandaVision, okay, so it's weird to talk about the characters, because the only characters that are like people are Wanda. Even Vision, like, I think Vision later in the series, as he kind of realizes, like, hey, there's some shit going on here.
Oh, I love that. That's some of my favorite stuff in the early episodes where he's like piecing it together. He's like, something's not right.
Yeah, and then in the Halloween episode where he realizes, like, okay, no, something's wrong. Something is very wrong here.
Yes.
I think he's great. And then him trying to figure out, like, what the hell am I? Who am I? I died? What the fuck? I think that Monica is great, and whatever flaws Captain Marvel had as a movie, I think that it served one great purpose, and that was introducing Monica, because she's great. Darcy coming back, like, talk about a character I did not expect to ever see again.
Yeah, I didn't expect that either.
Like, when I heard, like, Darcy for, like, Kat Dennings, I was like, what the what do you mean? Because, like,
like, what's your role?
Right, like, she's important in the, you know, the first two Thor movies, and then I didn't expect to see any of those characters back. Like, any of the Thor side characters, did not think are ever coming back. Like, I didn't expect Darcy to come back. If we ever see Solveig again, I'll be shocked. Like, Natalie Portman's coming back as Jane, which is cool, but, like, I didn't expect those characters to come back ever. Just like, I don't expect Sharon to come back, and now that I say that, I realize Sharon is definitely gonna be in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. She has to be. In some capacity. It's super weird if that character is not in that show. It's super weird if, like, Sharon is not there. Also, it's weird that, like, someone has to bring up at some point that, like, Sharon may or may not have made out with her uncle. Because Cap, the explanation that Cap was always married to, Peggy. That he was always Peggy's husband. That's nuts to me. And so, because it creates a real weird implication. About his relationship with Sharon, and also the scene in Winter Soldier where he has to hold Peggy's hand as she, or is that Winter Soldier? Is that Civil War where Peggy dies?
I think that's Civil War.
Okay.
Get it.
In Civil War. So it's like, she's like looking up at him like, oh, you're just as handsome as I remember. Here, her husband sitting at home, I guess. I feel like they didn't think that through. But there's a big playing field that's open now, I think, in terms of just, like, minor characters getting to come back. I feel like a lot of those characters that we haven't seen in a while could just pop up in these shows, which I think is nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited for Winter Soldier and that, like, action aspect. I think it'll be good. I don't think it'll be boring like a lot of people are saying it is.
I don't think it's going to be boring at all. I think it'll have the same tone as the Captain America movies.
Now, is this going to be something that I think people are getting up at 3 in the morning to watch? Hell no.
Oh, hell no. Not me.
Absolutely not.
My morning routine was literally getting up before work because I open on Fridays. Mm-hmm. So I get up at like fucking 3 in the morning. Anyway, I got so up at 3. I would watch it. Dude, literally. It was just like, that's how I start my day on Fridays. This? Not really.
I go to work at 10:30 every morning. So I was just getting up and going, oh, yeah, I'll watch this. I got time.
Yeah.
You know, it's something to do on Friday morning. So I do like the thing they set up at the end with Wanda, though. I do like that they set up... Well, I think the next time we see her will be in Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, it's going to be far off, but that's when we'll see her next. We're going to see her in Doctor Strange 2. And it's going to be interesting. I can't wait. I really can't wait.
Yeah, and hopefully, I feel like all roads right now are leading to, in whatever the next phase they do, because the next event is going to be Secret Invasion. That was the other thing they set up, was a Skrull shows up and is talking to Monica. And so that'll lead us into Secret Invasion, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know that's a show that they want to do, like a Secret Invasion, where it's like Nick Fury and one of the Skrulls trying to uncover this Skrull plot.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure it's going to fall into an Avengers
movie. That'll become fall into the next Avengers. I think the next thing they do, I feel like everything is setting up for us to get Young Avengers.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we'll Wanda's going to get Billy and Teddy, or the, not Billy and Teddy, Billy and Tommy. Teddy is Billy's husband. Tommy is his brother.
That's right.
She's going to get Billy and Tommy out of whatever pocket dimension they're in, and they're just going to be older now. So we're going to go get Billy and Tommy back. Cassie Lang is already there. Hawkeye, Kate Bishop is going to be there, and I think they're doing something mm-hmm. that's going to introduce America Chavez.
We got Miss Marvel as well, too.
Miss Marvel, and even though she's not like a Young Avenger, but they'll put her in for the sake of this. And then Patriot, who I fully expect we'll see in Falcon and the Winter Soldier. WandaVision, good show.
Good show. Good show.
Like, it didn't set the world on fire, and like, I wanted to, before we get out of here, because we're at about 2 hours.
Oh yeah, we're going over that time. My question to you, what's your favorite scene from the show? Do you have like any specific scene you really like?
My favorite, like, individual scene?
Individual scene. There's one for me, and I fucking
okay,
lost.
You go first. And then I'll think about it.
My favorite was them fighting that one episode. It's the episode where they introduce Quicksilver, fake Pietro.
Yeah.
The fight. Fucking, because we were talking about how great Paul Bettany was earlier.
Yeah, when they're arguing and he's like, I don't know what I am. And they're like, they're in the house flying around.
It's horrifying. Paul Bettany's acting is so good in that scene because he's fucking conveying how scared Vision is right now. He even says it, obviously, but he's fucking, he can tell how terrified he is. And Wanda just being like, you know, she starts the credits and he's like, no.
No. We're going to have this conversation.
I was like, what the? It was so good.
It felt
perfect. And I love them together, obviously, but
I'm trying to think of like what a scene that I really like is. I my brain just keeps coming back to, it's less the scene and more the shot when the aspect ratio changes in, I think that'd be episode 3.
Yeah.
When it goes from 4:3 to 16:9 and you see it happen in real time. And Wanda looks over and she sees the dude in the beekeeper suit and she just goes, no.
Oh, that's a good scene.
It's really good. But like just that, the change in the visual, the change in the aspect ratio is that shit got me. And whatever episode, I think it's episode 6. See, episode 5 or 6. Whatever episode that it ends and you can hear –
the start of Voodoo Child playing.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
like,
bro,
the episode is very clearly about to end. You just hear, like, and it hits the credits right on, right as the distortion kicks in. Like, fuck, yes. Yes.
It's perfect.
If you want to do a cool musical moment in your show, your game, your whatever, always use Jimi Hendrix. Use always. Jimi Hendrix 100% of the time. It's always good. Remember Mafia 3?
Yes, I remember.
Remember how you hit, it's like, press X for new game, and all along the watchtower kicks in?
Dude, perfect. Fucking rules.
That influenced so much, in my opinion, of that game. Like, right away. I was like, all right, they know what they're doing.
Such a great game.
Because you can always use Hendrix.
Always.
Hendrix is, if your thing is cool, Hendrix as a state will let you license it. They don't give a shit.
It has to be a part of it, or it's not
cool. Right. Is your thing in any way inspired by the 1960s? Yes?
Use
Jimi Hendrix.
This is, what is it? The Hendrix theory.
Yes.
And it works.
One last thing before we get out of here. Those Vision memes, please keep them coming. They're so
good. Dude, oh my God, please. 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 I need them.
I had a vision of me whooping y'all ass. Brother. Now go to bed.
That baby don't look like me, Maury. The baby.
Oh, that was good.
That one fucking killed me.
That's like, no, me and Wanda don't talk no more. And he's got a grill.
Yeah. No, Wanda and me don't talk no more.
It's like, why did you guys make the Vision from Jacksonville?
Yo, literally makes me so mad. The one, last one. Hey, Wanda, you hungry? Yeah. All right, cool. Make it something. I'm like, fuck off.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay, we are out of time. We gotta go.
We gotta roll.
I'm Marcus. You can follow me on Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, all that stuff at Archer Arios. That's ArxHerArios. The X is a C. Please do not make me explain it. My co-host, my guest this week, my dear friend Monet, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me at Deep Space Niners. It's a deep space and then nine and then Niners. I gotta fix that. But it works out. It works out, definitely.
Makes sense. I'm not gonna make any promises on when the next episode will be. It might be next week, might be in a month. The show schedule is essentially when I have something to talk about at this point. A lot of times I don't have anything to say about anything. And a lot of times I can talk for 2 hours. So it really just depends on whatever. But until then, take care. Stay safe. It's scary out there, y'all. Be easy. Drop rules, next it came out of my head. You're out of time.